This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. One of the most recognizable voices in hip-hop is also one of the deepest.
Yeah, because of cash in the purse, guns blast in the hearse. A vast universe when the last is the first. The past been the curse, I need some aspirin, a nurse. It's your casket.
Charlie Tuna's signature baritone was first heard during the 90s as a member of Jurassic 5. That was an L.A. rap group with a playful vibe and a very positive message. Now Charlie has gone solo. His latest album, Fish Market Part 2, is both personal and political. I talked to Charlie when his first solo album, Fish Out of Water, came out last year. Charlie Tuna, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, man, to the fullest.
So first things first, you were born Charlie Stewart?
Yeah, Charles Leroy Stewart IV.
The fourth?
Yes,
sir. How and when did that become Charlie Tuna?
I think I was about 5 years old, 6 years old, and my father, his nickname was Pee-wee. So throughout the family, everybody called him Pee-wee. So he was like, I'm going to find a nickname for you. I just remember him saying this. And then one day watching the Starkist Tuna commercials and seeing the deep voice fish going, tell him Charlie sent you. And he was like, I'm going to start calling you Tuna. And it stuck to me.
Really? So this wasn't a late-in-the-game hip-hop name. This was actually your childhood nickname.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it was late-in-the-game, too, because I was trying to stray away from it. I thought it was just so corny and so,
yes.
You know, my family nickname. So yeah. I was like, I don't want you to call me that in front of my friends. But Pop slipped. It stuck with the friends as well, and yeah.
And then at some point, you made, instead of the T-U, you made it a 2.
Yeah, I was just trying to be clever with it, and I really didn't want to be perfectly honest, Starkist. I didn't want to get sued.
There you go. They're probably happy.
I hope so.
So this was Chicago, where you grew up?
Yes, sir, Southside.
What was that like?
Wow. I would imagine Vietnam at times, you know what I'm saying?
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy. But then, you know, good times as well.
I mean, this is like the 70s, 80s?
Yeah, 70s and 80s. And then I moved to Los Angeles in 86.
And how did you get involved with hip-hop?
I had a couple of friends who could freestyle, and they kind of embarrassed me in front of a girl that I liked by freestyling about me in a negative way in front of the girl.
Really, just out on the street?
Yeah. And we was just all playing around one summer night, but it really embarrassed me. So I was like, I'm going to go write something and memorize it and act like I freestyle it. And next time I get an opportunity like that, I'm going to clown these guys the way they clown me. And I got that opportunity like about 2 or 3 weeks later. And I kind of looked like the man when I did it. So I got the bug, I think, after that.
Did you get the girl?
You know, sad to say, I mean, I did get the girl in a sense, but she moved from Chicago to Memphis, and that was just heart-wrecking. Whole other story.
But it got you started. Then in L.A., you became a regular at this place that became legendary called the Good Life Cafe.
Yes, sir. It was a really small strip mall kind of place. Could hold probably 75 to 100 people, but it'd be easily 700 people in the parking lot because it just got that popular. And it became kind of college for us, you know.
Yeah.
A way that we honed our skills. Like, you couldn't curse. And it made you focus on clever ways to get across ideas without having to succumb to what was going on the radio at the time. It made us kind of anti-gangster rap, so to speak, because we couldn't get a deal. So everybody in the place was massively positive, whether singers, poets, or...
Really?
It was just
crazy. But it started out because you were the outcasts,
yes,
essentially.
Sir.
It's like the Salon des Refusés.
Yes, sir.
And so you had these rivals, and you ended up sort of teaming up with them.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, man. I mean, you know, it was cool because we were already a group called the Unity Committee. It was Cut Chemist, myself, and a brother, Mark Seven. And then the Rebels of Rhythm were all the way in South Central. So going to the Good Life with our two prospective crews and kind of being outcast, that camaraderie existed instantly. And then one day they came over to our studio and Cut Chemist had this beat. They liked it and Cut was like, okay, well, you can have it if you let my group get on it. And it was like, all right, cool. So that was our first collaboration. And when we did it, that song sounded better and had like more wings and strength than anything our two prospective crews did. And you don't stop, rock the rhythm that'll make your finger pop. To the tick-tock, tick-tick, tick-tism. Live and direct, it's the Rebels of Rhythm on your radio. Turn up the stereo, cause it's working. What was that song? It's called Unified Revolution. We got that record to as many DJs as we possibly could. But because of that, that song got us a couple of record deal offers. Went back home, and I played the song to my son's mom. And as a joke, she was like, You guys think y'all sound like the Fantastic Five. Y'all sound more like the Jurassic Five, and start laughing and walked out. And I was like, ho ho. Fellas, if we do a group, let's call it the Jurassic Five.
Jurassic meaning because you were so old school?
Well, Jurassic meaning, like I said, it was a joke. She was trying to clown us. But I started saying it and thinking, okay, we know about the word Jurassic, not necessarily from school, but from this movie of bringing old stuff into a new time.
I got you.
I was like, bam, that's it. It just worked, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Let's, for our listeners who aren't familiar, let's listen to a little bit of J5's hit from 1998. Called Concrete Schoolyard.
Now I'ma say this one time, boy, and that's my word.
We rock a shot to knock fire through the Hindenburg.
The contribution is clear.
You add water to bone
and get the Jurassic vibe on the microphone.
Now if you like the tone
and how the harmony's done
and the sucking MCs die before they begun,
well, I like to know if you got the notion,
cause we're number one.
I'm not trying to save my style.
That is Jurassic 5 from more than a decade ago, featuring Charlie Tuna, who is my guest today. Now, that song features some hallmarks of J5's sound, the group harmonies and the playful lyrics. And it's so clearly not that heavy-duty, in-your-face, gangsta kind of rap.
Right. We were trying to stray away from the normal and go back to what we fell in love with about hip-hop, you know what I'm saying, which was that move your, you know, ass and your mind will follow, so to speak. I mean, kind of vibe. And that's what we loved. Because I think if we tried to fit in to what was going on
and play a role,
you would have been able to see straight through it. You know?
Yeah.
So we were just trying to be us.
Right. What's your writing process like these days when you're writing lyrics? How do you do that?
Wow. You know, sometimes, like on a daily basis, I'm finding something ironic. And I'll see it and go, oh, wow, that'd be a crazy lyric, you know. And I'll kind of store it in my memory banks or record it on my phone or write it down, something like that. Or sometimes the whole actual song just comes to me like, yo, that's the song, and do it like this. And it spills out in a matter of minutes.
Is there an example of that on this record?
Yeah, The Righteous Way to Go, song about my family. I was in Germany, and it just flooded me real quick, and I had to just grab something. And in 20 minutes, I wrote something down that I thought would be just a sketch, but it was the song.
Through fights with mom and long nights you're gone, through all types of wrong, I love my pops. Through penitentiary, drug addiction, and misery, you defeated the enemy, I love my pops. 20-some-odd years, wiping my little sister's tears, she missed dad, but where was my pops? Too proud to tell us he was running from his demons, and we thinking that nothing could ever budge my pops. But I used to wonder what put my moms under my pops and kept them together for 17 summers. I reminisce in my mind, me and my pops would bond. The time we spent, it never seemed funner. But I remember the day that he left. Him and my mama, they never nurtured their relationship. And it went from Bonnie and Clyde to problems with money and pride together.
So this is a song about, among other things, your parents breaking up. How did your family react to these personal, very personal things being on this record?
The Righteous Way, my mom and my dad and my son's mom were the three people who I really wanted to hear that song, because it was basically through their eyes that I was telling this story. So I played it to my mom, and she was like, I don't like this song. And I was like, Ma, is that because it's a bad song? She was like, it's too personal. It's a good song, it's just too personal. Don't put it out.
Yeah.
And, but my son's mom was the deciding factor for me. And she was like, she kind of listened to it and laughed at it and was like, yeah, I did take you through that, didn't I? She was like, it's truth, so I can't say no not to put it out.
Yeah. Given that our president, A, had a father not around, and B, talks all the time about the importance, especially in the African-American community, of fathers being there, I was reminded of that by this very, very moving song.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
Speaking of your mother, you used your mother in a song once. I want to play a little bit of your mom.
Hey, child, this your mama. Well, yeah, somewhere rapping. You need to be somewhere going to look for you a real job. Go get you a job somewhere, pay some bills and stuff. I'm a song rapping. Rapping. That's all you want to think about is rapping. Go get you a job, boy.
Believe it or not, that's a real
voicemail.
Yes,
yeah,
sir. And I saved it. I said, you know what, Mama, I'm going to save this, and I'm going to prove, I'm going to prove this to you. I'm going to turn this around. You're going to like this message because it was opposition, you know. And so,
how'd she feel about that?
She loves it. See, my mom is the most proudest woman on earth, and I love that about her, you know. I sometimes can't take her places because her and my father are like, hey, you know who you're sitting with? Like, I'm like Kanye West or somebody. You know? They're like, mom, come on now. They don't know who I am, you know.
There's another song on this album called Graff Time, G-R-A-F-F Time, mm-hmm. which is about your career, I guess, as a graffiti artist.
Yes, sir.
Does that period of your life and being a graffiti artist influence your music, work into the music these days?
Yes, sir. I mean, well, just as a painter and as an artist, I try to be as detailed as possible within my paintings and within anything that I try to sculpt.
And I should tell the listeners to look at your paintings online because if you think of a graffiti artist in one way as just words painted on a wall, these are incredibly detailed, figurative portraits and paintings.
Right. And see, that skill set is how I try to approach lyrics. I need to see them. I need for them to be like beautiful in a way, as far as like how they fall and the different ways of playing on words and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it all kind of correlates. I think that is the piece that I take away from painting.
I read somewhere that you had a moment as a young man being inspired by a Van Gogh painting.
Yeah.
What was that? How did that happen?
I toured Europe with Ozan Whiteley, and that was my very first time being in Amsterdam, right? So I picked up a little brochure, and I was like, that's right, the Van Gogh Museum is here. So I'm going to go check it out. And one of the first paintings that you see on the first floor is that famous painting of a sunflower.
Mm-hmm.
I was like across the room when I saw it, and it looked like he took an actual sunflower and plastered it against a canvas and somehow got it to stick. As you get closer to it, you start to see the strokes and how much paint he used. And it just really took my head to another place. I was not ready to absorb what I saw. You know, I was like, wow. And how old is that? Like, what, 100, 200 years, yeah. years old? This is crazy. And it's still, you know, so I walked around the place and really looked at how oil starts to, how it ages. Some of it cracks. Some of it blends really crazy. And I was instantly like, yo, I have to try this stuff right here. You know, and that's kind of how I got into oil painting.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, I can't let you go without asking you about what I guess is your most hardcore and controversial song. Let's listen.
Ready?
Oh, well. Another day alone. It's me and my stuff, buddy. No one ever wants to play with me. They think I'm scary. I'm not scary. I'm really pretty nice. I may be big and scary, but I'm really pretty nice. I may be big and scary, but I'm really pretty nice. When you see me, you gotta think twice. I may be big and scary, but I'm really pretty nice, man.
That is, I may be big and scary, but I'm really pretty nice, off of your record called Baby Loves Hip Hop.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I wasn't ready for that one.
Good. Who would have thought, 15, when you were starting out, that there would be rap music for toddlers?
Oh, and you know, you're totally right, man. I mean, from being an outcast type of music to seeing it on, you know, change the social climate of things, you know what I'm saying? It's a worked out thing to me.
Yeah. I mean, well, good luck with this record.
Thank you.
Charlie Tuna, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Charlie Tuna's latest record is called Fish Market Part 2.
Yes, we keep it ripping for the... If no real to you, so we heat the place to the point of...